First case for argument, DeKalb County and others versus the FHA. Ms. Welsh.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I'm Mary Welsh. I'm here on behalf of Department of Revenue Director Hamer. I will be speaking first about the jurisdictional questions that exist solely in the Hamer action. Mr. Mielke will address the statutory construction question, and Mr. Springer will address the 10th Amendment issue, although, of course, we will entertain questions on the briefs. The Hamer action represents an affront to federalism and comity principles that have long been held in three different respects. The first is the Tax Injunction Act, which bars federal courts from determining state taxes. And here, this is clearly, the Hamer action is clearly an action to restrain state and local tax collection. And it doesn't fall, the Hamer action, within any of the exceptions that exist for the Tax Injunction
Act. But isn't that a side issue? I mean, if Hamer is out of the case, what difference does it make?
Well, certainly with regard to comity and federalism, it makes a significant difference.
No, but I mean, what difference does it make to the states?
Well, to the states, it means that the states would not be enjoined against collecting taxes. And what would happen is that, quite properly, the plaintiffs would have to bring their action in state court, or we could bring a declaratory.
If Hamer is out of the case, what difference does it make to the basic issue of whether the states can tax Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac?
Well, this court's if the state isn't a party, the district, we wouldn't be bound by this court's decision.
I'm sorry, you're not answering my question. If Hamer is out of the case, what difference does it make to the ability, the right of the states to tax Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac?
It would make a difference if Hamer were in the case, because then Hamer would be ordered.
I don't understand you. Hamer is not the only party. The county is the party. Counties are party, right?
Correct. But there are two separate taxing.
If they're not allowed to tax these federally chartered companies, then they're not allowed to tax, even if Hamer is out of the case.
Right, but we're allowed to tax if we're out of the case, because the decision wouldn't be binding on us.
Us as being
who? The state.
What?
The state.
Illinois?
Yes. Because both the state and the counties tax these transactions. That's why we were sued separately, I assume. We were not party to the DeKalb action. We were not a plaintiff in the DeKalb action.
I see. Okay, I didn't understand that.
Right. So in addition to, and this is really, I'm talking about the Hamer action in particular, where...
So they impose different, okay, so you're saying both the states and the counties want to tax...
Separately, yes.
These. So how much money is involved?
It's 50 cents on, I believe...
The total. How much are we talking about? Is this a big revenue issue for Illinois?
It's we haven't quantified it because
why haven't you quantified?
Because they haven't paid it.
No.
I mean, we don't.
You know,
we don't
must have some sense of what the revenue implications are for the state. Is this a lot of money or little money?
I can tell you that it's 50 cents on every $500 for every transaction.
That doesn't tell me anything. I'm interested in the aggregate.
I don't know the aggregate.
You don't know how many transactions occur in any county in the state of the 102 counties.
I don't have that information, and it's not in the
record. Is there some place where that information is available?
I don't know. I can check for sure. I'd be happy to do that. Yes. Yes. But in addition to the Tax Injunction Act, the sovereign immunity...
Interest in taxing these companies, is this just a function of the fact that in the wake of the 2008 financial collapse, for the first time Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac were doing a lot of foreclosure?
That's my understanding. Yes.
So yes. This will pass, right?
Correct. It will. It will. And this, and I see I'm already into my rebuttal time, but I want to make a quick statement about Hudson Valley Federal Credit Union. Hudson Valley Federal Credit Union is a decision by the highest court in New York, and it held that federal credit unions themselves as entities are not exempt from recording taxes just like these, even though they are exempt from all taxation just the way the plaintiffs are here.
You've got a lot of cases against you.
I know, but I have New York's highest case. Those cases are district court cases. We're hoping this court decides those questions. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you, Ms. Welsh. Mr. Milka?
Craig Miltke on behalf of County of DeKalb and the Recorder's Office. To answer one of the questions you posed earlier, Your Honor, it would appear that the tax per transaction is probably about $200. I would estimate that in DeKalb County there's probably hundreds of these transactions. To put everything into a little bit of context here, because I think that's kind of important to figure out why we're here, these enterprises, of course, had the congressional charter to stabilize the secondary mortgage market. Obviously, they
ask you when these company when Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac became private companies. That was what I think in '68 and '70, something like that. Mm-hmm. There was a Congress enacted statute saying they were private and exempting them from taxation. What was the position of the Illinois and Wisconsin delegations in Congress with respect to those statutes?
I am not aware of any particular position that they took on that, Your Honor. Certainly the record does not reflect any type
of congressional decision. Well, I'm sure their senators and representatives voted.
I would tend to assume that they voted in favor of that charter and approving it.
I mean, because you... Your side of the case makes a big issue of, you know, federal government shouldn't be allowed to limit state taxing power, but it's Congress in which the states are very heavily represented, which gave this immunity to these companies.
Absolutely.
So it's not the federal government stamping on the states; it's Congress deciding, yeah, okay, we'll allow these companies to be exempt from all taxation.
I would agree.
I don't see the federalism issue.
Well, I'm going to leave that to Don Springmeier because I think that really hits on the concept.
Let me sneak one in. From the county point of view, the tax stamp is put on the deed and it's paid for by the person recording the deed, that is the new owner of the property.
No. The tradition in Illinois, as I think throughout the states are, the seller in a real estate transaction has to tender a recordable deed
right.
at closing. A recordable
so that the
deed,
seller pays the...
A recordable deed has the tax stamps on them. So
the cost is not passed on to the buyer?
That's an
Back
interesting question.
When I was
question.
Practicing
I mean,
law on closing real estate sure. deals, if I recall correctly, that was charged to the... purchaser when you're mortgaging something,
no,
the mortgage company will put the stamps on and charge
I think
the
you would see on a RESPA statement as an example yeah. that the tax stamps are a charge to the seller.
So who pays it, the buyer or the seller?
Traditionally in Illinois, it would be the seller pays the tax stamps.
That's what I said.
Yes, I agree with that. Yeah.
Okay.
It's the seller that does it. What I wanted to focus in on is the group of Supreme Court cases.
Wait a minute. Before I missed something.
Sure.
Fannie Mae does not operate as a seller, normally speaking, right?
Well, certainly historically, the foreclosures were probably less than 1%,
no.
so they were rarely
no.
a seller.
So were you charging the $5 or 50
cents per
500?
Well, as we allege in the complaint and we attach copies of these.
In the days before these things of causes, were Fannie Mae and its brother?
It would appear they were paying the transfer
They were
tax.
Paying it regularly.
Yes. That's what it appears. That's what we allege in the complaint. And we even attach even more recent examples where up until the last couple of years, Fannie and Freddie were paying the transfer tax, at least in DeKalb County. Well, those are exhibits to our complaint.
All of a sudden they quit?
I'm guessing the volume, they decided it was time to save some money if you're going to do hundreds of foreclosures per county. Right.
When did they quit?
I think we have exhibits to our complaint from 2010.
Up to that time, they were living like all the rest of us boys and girls, paying our share. Yeah.
That's what we allege in the complaint, yes. I wanted to focus on this group of U.S. Supreme Court cases. Obviously, Bismarck is the case that appellees state over and over again and was a highlight of the cases that have gone against us. Bismarck, of course, is a federal land bank type institution. They foreclose on property in Bismarck. Bismarck is actually the local lumber yard. The land bank goes to fix up the property and they're charged sales tax. The Supreme Court said that is something that you are exempt from under all taxation, and they specifically say this is not a tax on the property, because even though you might have been buying lumber that went into the property, it's not a tax on the property.
Bismarck did not use the phrase all taxation, did it?
I think in Bismarck it was simply exempt from local taxation. Now, there's the three other cases which...
It's very strange the way you argue that all taxation is narrower than taxation.
I'm not
That's one of your really strangest arguments. How
I'm
can
not going
to
hit on that very much at all, Your Honor. I'm not going to say I disagree with you on that. What I'd like to point out, though, is this. In the other three Supreme Court cases, which is Pittman, Lorenz, and I think it's Courseland or Cortland, those are much closer to what we have here. There, the states were trying to tax the recording of a mortgage. And again, it was pennies per hundred of the loan. In those cases, the Supreme Court didn't say, well, the entity is exempt and therefore they don't have to pay, although in each of those cases they were. They rather said it is a tax on the mortgage. And I would suggest that here it is a tax on the property and therefore the exception to the exemption. Fannie and Freddie pay real estate taxes like everybody else. So if, pursuant to the U.S. Supreme Court, a recording fee, a recording tax on a mortgage is a tax on a mortgage, not the transaction, not the privilege to record the mortgage, but rather a tax on the mortgage, then I suggest a transfer tax on a deed is a tax on the property, and that gets us into the carve-out, the exception to the exemption.
But there's no case that supports that.
Well, it's interesting that we have three cases where there were taxes imposed on recording mortgages, but never a case in our history.
The exemption applies to the entity, though.
But that's not what the Supreme Court is focused on. They on these three cases...
How do you know what they're focused on?
Oh, we have to take them at their words, I guess. And there they say, they specifically say, it doesn't matter who pays the tax. They note in one of the cases, I think it's Pittman, that the lender could have passed that tax on to the borrower. But the Supreme Court says, we don't care, because the tax is on the mortgage.
Well,
and
what
it is
does
the
that
mortgage
mean
that's
to
exempt.
Say it's on the mortgage? It's on a transfer. It's on a transaction.
Your Honor, I would tend to come to that conclusion, too, but the Supreme Court says it's not. And, in fact, that was one of the ways the states were trying to get out of the general exemption by saying it is a tax on the privilege of recording the mortgage. The Supreme Court said, no, it's not. It's a tax on the mortgage. It is a direct tax on the mortgage. Mm-hmm. And I would assert if that's correct, and I don't know if it is as a matter of real estate law, but it seems to be the law of the U.S. Supreme Court, then this is indeed a tax on the property. And the congressional charter says Fannie and Freddie have to pay real estate taxes just like everybody else. Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Milka. Mr. Springmeier?
Good morning. May it please the Court, I'm Don Springmeier from Wolf Rifkin on behalf of Milwaukee County, and here to devote some time to the Constitutional Law Commerce Clause issues in the case. I pose to the Court that we have here a question of first impression which arises out of these circumstances. You have a state which has validly enacted a tax which is non-discriminatory, not aimed at economic protectionism, not aimed at interstate commerce, not targeting interstate commerce, and dealing with solely local transactions, the recording of the deed for the sale of a property at the county recorder's office. On the other hand, you have Congress validly creating a federal instrumentality, Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, with a tax exemption. Those two things operate without conflict up to a certain point. And that point is when Congress privatized both of those corporations and made them the equivalent of privately owned mortgage bankers. But still, the question arises, does the tax exemption provision in the statute continue to be valid once the corporations become privatized? Does it carry forward?
So you're saying Congress doesn't have the power to exempt a private entity from taxation?
Correct, Your Honor.
Well, where do you get that from?
Well, I find no case
outside. Well, where do you get it from? Where is it in the Constitution? Where is that limitation imposed by the
limitation
Constitution?
In the Commerce Clause, Your Honor, to say
Commerce Clause is a grant of authority to Congress. I don't understand.
But
you don't think Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are in commerce?
But if all that is required is to say that they are in interstate commerce, then there's no limit on Congress's power in the Commerce Clause.
Well, you're arguing, I gather, that the Commerce Clause doesn't apply to a local transaction. You're claiming this is a local transaction.
Yes,
right?
Your Honor. And if the
but
local...
Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac have enormous national impact. Tremendous.
They do, Your Honor.
In some quarters, you know, they're blamed for the financial crisis. So to think that Congress can't regulate Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, which includes being taxed.
But it can regulate them, but does anything they do...
Tax the life out of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac? What's that about? What kind of that be? You place confiscatory taxes on Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac?
Your Honor, this is not a
confiscatory... Can you place confiscatory taxes on them? Can you destroy them with state taxation? Is there any limit on state taxation of these companies?
Is there any limit...
Don't ask me. Answer me.
Your Honor, the limit would be whether the state tax targets interstate commerce. You pose a confiscatory tax...
You target Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, which are obviously national enterprises with great macroeconomic significance.
We don't target them, Your Honor.
Target this everybody. Anybody who's in their position.
Anybody who sells a piece of real estate, Your Honor. It's not a target against...
You do that against a bank?
Yes.
Against an individual? Against anybody?
Bank of America has to pay this tax. Wells Fargo has to pay this tax. You and I have to pay this.
They don't have a statutory exemption from taxation.
I agree.
Where is it written that Congress, as part of its regulation of commerce, can't decide to exempt a particular company? These companies, they're nominally private, but they exist to serve federal functions, to promote housing and so on. So why can't, given their strategic significance in the national housing market, why can't Congress, give them privileges?
Because, Your Honor, that collapses the local into the national. Justification...
I don't understand you. Congress regulates enormous... has enormous regulatory scope, and that regulatory scope has a tremendous impact on purely local activities of all sorts.
It can, Your Honor, but what is the difference?
It's not it can, it does.
But what is the difference between Fannie Mae and Walmart under
this
scenario?
Oh, that's a tremendous difference. They start off as federal instrumentalities.
Yes.
And you accept that they could be exempt from taxation.
Yes, I do.
They're converted into private companies in the thought that they would be more efficient. But they're doing the same thing. That is, they're, I mean, maybe not very effectively, but they're trying to, you know, spread home ownership, make home ownership more affordable and so on. They continue to have their federal function even though they're private companies. It's a lot like the privatization of the post office. And, you know, there's a lot of talk about why don't we privatize the air controller system. Okay? But they would still be carrying on a federal function. And if Congress said, well, these are really quasi-private, so we don't want the states taxing them. Is that unconstitutional in your view?
I don't find a case that says
it can be done.
But
you regard that as unconstitutional.
I do, Your Honor.
Do you have authority for that?
No, there is not a case that says that, Your Honor. That's why I say this is a case of first impression.
It will be one way or another.
It will be one way or the other. That's true. Is it sufficient to be a quasi-federal instrumentality?
Who appoints the board of Fannie Mae and Fannie Mac?
They are shareholder-elected boards, Your Honor.
Who owns the shares?
The public.
Okay.
We can.
But who elects the board?
The shareholders elect the board. The public does.
The government has nothing to do with the selection of the people that run the Fannie Mae and Fannie.
That's true.
The government is now running them, of course.
Under the conservatorship, right. That's true, Your Honor.
Right.
But as a conservator, it stands in the shoes of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. It does not provide them with additional protections or shields because of the conservatorship. So that's why.
Isn't this more a question of their function than their nature? You're saying that if they're not government institutions, you can't do this. But they're carrying on a national mortgage market, are they not?
But
isn't that what determines whether the Commerce Clause applies?
Your Honor, I don't see any authority for the idea that a private company, no matter how large its impact on interstate commerce, is appropriately exempted from a non-discriminatory, broad-based, non-targeted state tax. All that does is say it increases their profit.
Why not?
Well, because that...
Well, are you arguing that the Commerce Clause doesn't authorize it?
Yes, that is what I'm arguing.
What if Congress said that in order to promote the computer industry, modern online activities, we're going to exempt computer startups, say, from state and local taxation?
Yes.
Would that be unconstitutional?
Would, Your Honor.
That's very strange, because what you're saying is obviously Congress can say, well, we're going to give money to we're going to devote federal research to particular commercial activities, and you know we're going to grant patent protection and so on to all sorts of private companies because we want to promote some sector of the economy. That's perfectly lawful, right?
Yes, but
yeah,
that
don't. But that's perfectly lawful, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Now, what if the form in which they subsidize agriculture, for example. What if the form the subsidy takes is an exemption from some type of state regulation? Can't Congress exempt certain activities from state regulation?
It can. I argue that the exemption from state tax is of a completely different character.
I don't understand that. What if they say states can't regulate wind farms because we want to promote wind farming, and we don't want states saying wind farms make noise, they kill birds. We don't want that. So we're saying you can't regulate wind farms the way you regulate ordinary windmills. Congress can do that. Government can do that. Well, what if instead it says, you know, we love wind farms, so we're going to exempt wind farms or electricity generated by wind farms from state taxation? What's the difference between that form of limiting state regulation of an industry, of a private industry, and giving it a tax exemption.
Your Honor, I see my time is up. May I still answer your question? When the federal government preempts a field, and one example would be the Exxon versus Hunt case in CERCLA, where there's a comprehensive regulation and a taxation and an exemption statute, in fact, in CERCLA, and then a state, which was New Jersey, tries to impose its own taxes, then that is a preemption case as opposed to an exemption case. And I would argue that the exemption case should not...
I don't see what the difference is. What's the difference between exempting Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac from, I don't know, minimum wage law or something, and saying, you know, we're going to give you a tax exemption?
The difference, I believe, Your Honor, is the invasion of the state sovereignty and the importance of the tax.
State sovereignty embraces regulation, but you're saying federal government can preempt if there's some national interest, the Commerce Clause, for example. If it can preempt, does it matter whether the preemption takes the form of killing some state regulation or killing a state tax? Is there something magic about tax that isn't possessed by other forms of state regulation?
I think there is, Your Honor, because of the importance of the tax.
But regulation is important also. I mean, what if Congress said, we don't think there should be speed limits anymore. They slow down traffic. That would be an enormous invasion of traditional state regulatory authority.
Yes.
But it would be lawful, right?
I'm not sure it would be lawful outside of interstate highways, Your Honor.
Pardon?
I'm not sure it would be lawful outside of interstate highways, Your Honor.
No, but local highways are a part of commerce, right?
Yes, they are.
They are. So Congress can regulate local highways, which means it can preempt state regulation of highways, of all sorts of things.
You mean the highway has to cross a state line to be eligible for this kind of treatment?
No, Your Honor. The fact of the federal government having built the interstate highways, and they also cross state.
Well, the federal government contributes to every form of highway in practical terms, doesn't it?
I don't know the answer to that.
It subsidizes highways generally.
Yes, Your Honor.
I think.
I see my time is up.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Springmeier. So we'll hear from Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I'm Michael Johnson from Arnold and Porter. I represent the Federal Housing.
Well, I don't understand that. Why is the Federal Housing Authority represented by private lawyers?
With respect, Your Honor, we're the Federal Housing Finance Agency, and Congress, in creating the agency, endowed it with private litigation authority, made expressly clear that the director of FHFA can be represented in any court by his own counsel. So Congress has...
But doesn't the FHA have its own legal staff?
There is a general counsel and a deputy general counsel. They've retained us.
I see. So, in other words, is this generally what the FHA does, that is... When it's in litigation, it hires private lawyers?
Often it does,
yeah,
yes.
I'm just curious.
Yes, often it does. It's more efficient, and that's something
why
I want to...
Why is it more efficient?
More efficient, yes, from the agency's point of view, absolutely.
Don't they trust their own lawyers?
They do trust their own lawyers to select
not
competent...
Not much,
but not as much as
I am. Lawyers just aren't as smart as you are.
Their lawyers are very, very smart, but there are fewer of them.
Oh,
and
I
so
see.
From an efficiency perspective, we can deploy greater resources in the areas where the agency has identified the greatest need. Now, I wanted to focus on a question that Your Honor asked. Is there something magic about tax? Is there something magic about tax? The answer is no. The Supreme Court has answered that question for us It looked at it in the ACF case, which we cited in our briefs. The ACF case adopts that standard that arose in police power cases, that when Congress preempts a core power of state sovereignty up to ACF, often the police powers, that's okay as long as Congress expresses a clear and manifest intent to do so. And in ACF, the state power in question was the tax power. The Supreme Court applied the same standard.
Did the Fannie Mae and Fannie, whatever the other one was,
Freddie Mac.
Mac and May, there's a couple. When did they quit paying these taxes?
Your Honor, I don't know the answer, but it's not important because even if they had been paying right up until the eve of this litigation, that couldn't change the meaning of these statutes.
Well, I was just modestly curious. Were they paying it before?
No.
They never
were. Fannie and Freddie operate nationwide, and in the vast majority of jurisdictions, no payment.
They never paid anybody.
I didn't say that, that wouldn't be true because of the nature of these taxes. These are taxes where when you show up at the recorder's office with a deed and you say, I want my deed recorded, if the recorder an extraordinarily curmudgeonly fellow and says, I'm not recording your deed unless I see a check, you got to do it. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac have to... Pardon me?
Unless you see the stamps.
Unless you see the stamps. Or there's an exemption. And here there's an exemption.
Can you think of any exemption on those stamps except for the ones we're discussing now?
Illinois, like every state, so far as I know, provides state law exemptions. And so there are certain kinds of deeds. The prototypical example is a deed from the state government to someone else, but there's often a laundry list. There's no real question that the payment of a tax is not an absolute etched-in-stone requirement for the recordation of a deed.
Right.
When an exemption applies, the state officer records the deed.
All taxation is just money-raising.
I'm not sure I understand the
question.
Well,
that means you don't use the taxing authority, normally speaking, to destroy an institution, but you could.
You could. That's correct.
You could tax them out of existence.
That's correct, and I agree with the thrust of Judge Posner's questions that one of the purposes of Congress's broad exemption of these entities was to prevent the states from getting into a race to slap taxes on enterprises
like
that Congress...
Like the Dartmouth case, which went back a long, long time.
Dartmouth College involved the college's charter. McCulloch versus Maryland touches on these same issues.
I was more interested in the Dartmouth case because of Daniel Webster's comment of small colleges.
Indeed. Indeed. So is there something magic about state taxes? No. State taxes are not off limits. I was struck by Mr. Springmeier's assertion that this is a matter of first impression. He says there's no instance where the Supreme Court or any other court, at least as I heard him, has ever preempted a state tax that applied to private corporations and local taxation. And it's just not so, Your Honors. It's just not so. The Exxon versus Hunt case that Mr. Springmeier mentioned is a perfect example. That's a case where the federal statute was enacted pursuant to the Commerce Clause, CERCLA, Commerce Clause statute enacted to address environmental contamination. One provision of CERCLA, just like one small provision of the very broad charters of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, one provision of CERCLA said, we're going to fund Superfund cleanups through a federal mechanism, and states cannot tax oil and chemical companies to fund the same activities. So it said a certain kind of tax that would be imposed on specific private companies for an essentially local purpose, cleaning up environmental hazards in the state, states can't do that. Can't do that. So Congress preempted a tax that would necessarily hit private companies and that inherently applied to a local activity. The First Agricultural National Bank of Berkshire County case is very similar. That case involved a federal statute that prescribed the ways states could tax national banks. National banks, very similar to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, federally chartered, comprehensively federally regulated, created to fulfill an important national purpose, providing funds, growing the national economy. The argument that the Massachusetts Director of Revenue made in First Agricultural is virtually identical to the argument the appellants make here. The argument there was, yes, national banks were federal instrumentalities when they were created, but the economy's grown up around them. The Federal Reserve System has grown up around them. They're private now. They're not doing anything governmental. They shouldn't be treated as federal instrumentalities, and they shouldn't get the benefit of that federal statute that protects them from state income tax. And what did the Supreme Court say? No. No. The principal bone of contention between the majority and the dissent was whether the court had to decide the national banks were federal instrumentalities before applying the statute. The majority went ahead and applied the statute, said it was, quote, unnecessary, unquote. That's the Supreme Court's words. It's unnecessary to decide if they were still federal instrumentalities in order to apply the statutory protection. Congress does this not infrequently. We talked about CERCLA. ERISA contains a similar preemption provision. State taxes that would be imposed on ERISA benefit plans, preempted. States can't do that. There are a couple of provisions in Title IV that do the same thing. One prevents states from taxing the retirement income of non-residents. That's non-discriminatory because the theory would be that a state like California could tax the income via the company that's in California, even if the recipient of the income lived in a state like Florida or Nevada that had no income tax. So the idea is it's going to hit all recipients of the payments equally, non-discriminatory tax, local activity, company paying retirement benefits to its former employees. Congress said can't do that. Similar provision for USC 115 applies to income created by personal services at a U.S. military facility, Fort Campbell, Kentucky. Very interesting. It's in the toe of Kentucky, so it's in Kentucky, but very close to Illinois, Indiana, Missouri, Tennessee. We know what was going on there. Kentucky was trying to slap a tax on people who lived in the other states. Congress said, no, you can't do that. So there's really nothing special about taxes. There's nothing special about local activity. That's another one of Mr. Springmeier's catchphrases, that something about these taxes makes them special. They're sort of like property taxes. Well, the Deer Park case from the Fifth Circuit was looking at personal property in free trade zones within a state, Texas. Personal property within a state, Texas. The Special Court of Railroad Appeals decision in the Conrail case held that a federal statute exempted a private railroad from state property taxes. State property taxes. There's nothing more local than that, in Mr. Springmeier's view. So there's nothing special about the nature of these taxes. And there's nothing special about the fact that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac have become private. That was true in the Hunt case. That was true in the First Ag case. That's the specific issue the court analyzed in the Conrail case.
Why were Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac made private? Was that to raise more money for them? Or?
I don't know that the legislative history is particularly illuminating, and even if it were, whether we could take it at face value. But to harken back to a point Your Honor was making earlier and that I think is very important from a practical consequences point of view, I believe they were privatized to get the benefit of private capital and private innovation. And so when Your Honor asked, what if we wanted to privatize the post office, or what if we wanted to take advantage of some company that's invented something or has discovered a mineral that's located in only one place, and the federal government wants to protect that entity from being taxed out of existence by the state in which the mineral is located or where the company has to exist, does the federal government have to nationalize that enterprise and bring it in as part of the government in order to protect it from state taxation? Well, that's what the practical consequence of Mr. Springmeier's position would be, and I think it's very beneficial for Congress to be able to make the policy choice that in any particular area we think private capital and private entrepreneurship can do it better, and even though the thing we want them to do is important from a federal governance perspective, we're going to harness that entrepreneurship and we're going to give the advantage so that the mortgage, that home ownership can be spread more widely. And so So, of course, there's a federal interest here. There's a very strong federal interest here, and that's one of the things that differentiates Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac from Walmart. We're not Walmart. We're not Walmart. We were created by Congress. We were given a limited mission by Congress. We're not a corporation structured under federal law that's allowed to fulfill any purpose that's legal. That's not us. We are chartered with a limited mission, congressionally defined, important to the government, and that inherently involves interstate commerce. And we're continually and closely...
Did its mission remain congressionally ordained when they were made private? I mean, or could Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac have said, well, you know, mortgages, that's one thing, but we'd also like to build locomotives. Could they have done that?
No, the charters remain in effect. The charters remain in effect. The mission is limited to secondary market activities, secondary mortgage market activities. So there's nothing special about state taxes in general, nothing special about private enterprise in general, nothing special about local taxes in general. There are outer limits. This is under the Commerce Clause, so it has to affect commerce. There has to be an interstate component. Those hurdles are obviously met here. Congress had to express a clear and manifest purpose. They did that. They could hardly have spoken more clearly or expressed a more manifest purpose to place these enterprises off limits to the state tax taxing authorities.
If I can interrupt you, maybe your co-counsel wants to discuss this, but I'm just curious about what Ms. Welsh said about Hamer. They're both county taxes they want to impose on Freddie and Fannie, but also a state tax, and that Hamer is somehow the state tax.
Well, Mr. Hamer is the director of the State Department of Revenue. There are taxes imposed by the state, and there are taxes imposed by the county. One of the counties sued us, and we sued several counties who had been threatening to sue us because they had changed their position. They sent us a letter that's an exhibit in the district court files that says, if you don't start paying these taxes, we're going to sue you. So the thought that we were paying all along and that we changed our minds is not supported by the record. So there is a state component and there is a local component. And so that gets us into the jurisdictional issues. We sued Director Hamer because we don't think it's appropriate for the 50 states to be able to decide independently of the federal law whether they're going to follow the Supremacy Clause and whether they're going to honor these exemptions. We think that where Congress has granted an extraordinary provision in the Freddie Mac statute. It says, notwithstanding any other law, any civil action.
Does that include the Tax Injunction Act?
Yes, of course it does. It includes any other law. Any other law. Now, I expect that Ms. Welsh may come up and try to argue that, look, the statute says notwithstanding Section 1349 or any other provision of law, and that therefore we should apply something like a justum generis and say, look, it only applies to things that are kind of sort of like 1349. You can't do that. For one thing, a justum generis requires a list of more than one so that you can see what's similar. And notwithstanding any other law isn't a general phrase like other similar statutes. It's notwithstanding any other law. And every single court, so far as we've been able to determine, every single court to have looked at the question of whether a notwithstanding any other law provision trumps the TIA has held that it does. This, if I may finish my thought, Your Honor, this isn't a case where all Congress did was grant a general jurisdictional provision to Freddie Mac. It did more than that. The statute doesn't say, and the federal district court shall have jurisdiction over any action involving Freddie Mac. It says, notwithstanding any other law, the federal court shall have jurisdiction over any civil action involving Freddie Mac.
If you're wrong about this, do you lose?
No. We believe there are two other grounds. The FHFA sued in its capacity as regulator as well as its capacity as conservator. As a federal agency, it has an important interest in seeing that the charters that it is charged with enforcing and that the entities whose financial safety and soundness it is charged with supervising are not subject to illegal taxes. So there is an important federal interest here that supports FHFA's presence in the case as pled, I might say, clearly in the caption, as a regulator. And there is authority holding that federal conservators and receivers are entitled to an exemption from the TIA.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Johnson.
Welcome. If there are questions about the statutory issues or anything else, I'd be happy to answer them, but I do recognize my time is up.
Mr. Erda?
May it please the Court. Patrick Erda from the Department of Justice Tax Division on behalf of the United States.
Well, why is there a separate United States party and FHA?
Well, the United States has been appearing as amicus in a number of these cases on the statutory issue because it dealt with a tax exemption and how it should be interpreted. When the constitutional issue was presented, the Office of the Solicitor General decided that the United States by itself should be heard in addition to the FHFA, which, as Mr. Johnson correctly stated, has independent litigating authority. So that's why.
So you're just here as an amicus curiae, not as a party?
That's right. I'm both an amicus and an intervener as to the constitutional issues.
Yes, I'm just curious about the intervention. Why intervene? Are you seeking relief of some sort?
No, actually, it's the policy of the Solicitor General's office whenever there is a constitutional issue involved to participate as intervener where it can, in order that if the case were ever to reach a Supreme Court, that we would be a party. But I agree, it's a little odd because we have a federal agency and the United States. But that's both the policy of the Solicitor General's
office.
It's
called piling on in football, but go ahead.
Right you are, Your Honor. As Mr. Johnson has explained, the entities' exemptions from all taxations constituted a proper exercise of the commerce power, and I'm not really going to touch on that because I think that he properly laid out that this is clearly interstate commerce, and the Raich decision and decisions going back to Darby say that you can sweep up intrastate activity. I'm going to just talk for a few moments about the contention that the plain language of the statutes might support appellant's position. It does not. The statutes provide that the entities shall be exempt from all taxation imposed by states and localities except for real property taxes. Here, this is not a real property tax. Real property taxes, actually the court in Wells Fargo distinguished between excise taxes, taxes on the transfer of property, and real property taxes. And so here they are excise taxes, taxes on the transfer or recordation of property. So they don't fit within the narrow carve-out. And then as to the contention raised mainly in the brief that all taxation is a term of art that means something less than all taxation, that makes no sense. All taxation means just what it says, all taxation, and applies to the transfer taxes at issue here. If there are no further questions.
Actually, you do recognize an exception to all taxation for property taxes.
Oh, certainly, because the exception was written into the statute.
The Supreme Court.
Yeah. Exactly. There are no further questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Erda. So, would any of the three of you like to say something? have a minute? I don't know. Did their time expire? Pardon? Ms. Welch, okay. We'll certainly hear from you.
And I imagine my colleagues would like some time, too, as they were talked through. But so I have a couple things to say here. One is that the court remarked as strange, plaintiffs remarked brazen, that we were arguing that all doesn't mean all. But, in fact, Wells Fargo construed all exemption from all taxation to mean not all taxation.
There is a property tax exemption, yeah. Right.
But
that's it. Nothing else has been recognized.
No. In Wells Fargo, the Supreme Court held that the bonds that were exempt from all taxation, the very language that is used in the statutes at issue here, held that that language did not include privilege taxes, which everyone agrees the taxes at issue here are privilege taxes. And in addition...
What do you mean by a privilege tax?
It's a tax on the transfer of the property. It's not a direct tax on the plaintiffs, the entities.
I don't get the difference.
The difference here is that the exemption belongs...
It's not a tax on Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Is that what you're saying?
That is what I'm saying. Because the tax here, unlike the tax in the Sixth Circuit case, the tax here under the Illinois laws, the county law, the state, the law that...
Are you saying that all excise taxation is outside of all taxation?
I'm saying that Wells Fargo, Supreme Court in Wells Fargo, and
In your view, what would be exempt? What kind of tax couldn't be imposed?
Income tax, all direct taxes on the entities. Income tax, for example, would be exempt. But taxes like this, we all agree.
What about the Bismarck case?
The Bismarck case, interestingly, as the court pointed out, doesn't construe the word exempt from all taxation. It was about whether included excise direct taxes. So the Bismarck case actually is puzzling to me because it doesn't...
If excise taxes are included in the exemption, doesn't that kill your case?
No, because Wells Fargo held that construed the very term at issue here, exempt from all taxation, to exclude privilege taxes, excise taxes. No. Transfer taxes, estate taxes in Wells
Fargo. That's the inheritance case, isn't
correct.
It?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Well, there's a body of property which is inherited.
But it's not even a tax on the property. It's a tax on the privilege. That's of the privilege of transferring. And similarly, again, New York's highest court held that federal credit unions, which are also exempt from all taxation, the very words used here, are not exempt from recording taxes, the very taxes at issue here. So if this court, this court has to resolve this conflict between plaintiff's vision and the New York's highest court, which said that these taxes, an exemption from all taxation for federal credit unions, which were federally chartered just like the plaintiffs here, does not include a transfer tax, just like the taxes at issue here. In addition, the court mentioned that even after privatization, the plaintiffs exist and perform federal function. This really is not true. As our brief pointed out in the legislative history,
Mr. Johnson said, was he wrong when he said that the charter, the original charter of Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae remains in force as a limitation on what they can do?
That is correct. But what Congress said and the legislative...
Whether it's a federal function is not the issue. It's a national function, isn't it?
Well, with regard to the federal instrumentality question, though, what Congress said is when they were discussing this law, they said
it's
it is not...
It's an interstate function.
That's about the Tenth Amendment Commerce Clause, and I agree with Mr. Springmeier that there's authority to this effect that property transactions are inherently intrastate, and so they're not really within the scope of the Commerce Clause. But again, as our brief points out at page 6, Congress said it when it was privatizing Fannie and creating Freddie as a private corporation, it was not appropriate for the government to be involved in the operation of the secondary mortgage market. That was the reason they were privatized, because it wasn't an appropriate government function.
Why didn't it free them from their charter restrictions and let them sell cat food, for example?
I don't know the answer to that. What I do know is that
okay. Thank you. Your time has expired.
Thank you. We ask that you vacate or, at the very least, reverse. Thank you.
So, anyway, we'll give Mr. Milka and Mr. Springmeier a minute apiece. If you have anything further you want to say, I know your time has expired.
Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor. Craig Milka again for DeKalb County. I'm going to talk about the Pittman case. like here in Illinois. Illinois statute says it's a tax imposed on the privilege of transferring title. In Pittman, it was a tax on the privilege of recording the instrument, which was the mortgage. Didn't say who would pay, just like here in Illinois. The U.S. Supreme Court in Pittman says whoever pays the tax on the mortgage is not relevant because this is a tax on the mortgage. I think in part they're saying that. You asked, why is it a tax on the mortgage as opposed to something else? Because the tax is calculated there 10 cents per hundred of the principal amount of the loan. And in Pittman, the Supreme Court said, here also the tax is imposed upon the mortgage and is graded according to the amount of the loan. That's in the Pittman case. So, you know, does this make sense as a matter of real estate law? I honestly don't know, but this is how our Supreme Court looks at things, that if it's a recording tax, it's not on the privilege of recording, but if it's graded by the amount of the loan, it's a tax on the mortgage. Also in Pittman,
it's paid by the mortgagee, though, isn't it?
Well, Pittman and Crossland, the case before it, both indicate you're right. It could have been passed on one party or the other, but both of those times the court said we don't care ultimately who had to pay. It's a tax on the mortgage. In Pittman, it's Homeowners Loan Act that has a pretty much identical language. The loan corporation there, quote, shall be exempt from all state and municipal taxes. So I think when we look at Pittman and the Supreme Court's view of property law, this Illinois tax, contrary to what Illinois calls it in the statute, is a tax on the property, and that gets us into the exception to the exemption, and therefore it should be taxable.
Thank you, Mr. Milka. Mr. Springmeier?
Nothing further. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, well, thank you very much to all counsel.